Hey, this is Ryan Dawson of the Anti-Neocon Report, ancreport.com. With me today is Greg Lovett. He's a producer, and I'm going to tell you more about his most recent film, Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. It's about the burn pits in Iraq. We've all seen a lot of the nasty things, aside from the war itself and the sanctions that came before it that starved to death hundreds of thousands of people, and the depleted uranium, which is affecting unborn babies and other poisons. We have another new poison, and you can thank our friends at Kellogg Brown and Root KBR, which is a subsidiary of Halliburton, Dick Cheney's old company, which got its start by bribing Lyndon Johnson when he was a congressman and then later when he was a senator to give them federal funding on lands that were not even owned by the federal government, and then, of course, to keep the oil depletion allowance. And so it's just been one large gambit after another, and they're back in the news. There was a book written about this subject by Joseph Hickman called The Burn Pits, which I highly recommend. It's linked below if you're watching this on ANC Report. Go through there and get it from Amazon. It will piss you off, but it is worth it, and you should also support people who dig into these things. And so now there is a movie about it. The producer is Greg Lovett, and he's with me today. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
Pretty good, considering the dark subject matter. What are burn pits, and how do they differ from incineration pits, which is what I thought they're supposed to use?
Well, a burn pit is basically a dump. When the U.S. invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, they didn't really give much thought to what they were going to do with the garbage. And it turns out that each soldier produces about 8 pounds of garbage per day on the battlefield. So if you've got bases with 10, 20, 30,000 people on it, it's hundreds of thousands of tons of garbage per day. And the military, in all their wisdom, decided the best way to get rid of this garbage was to throw it into a big hole in the ground. And they got rid of everything. So from paper, plastic, rubber, metals, medical waste, even body parts, amputated body parts. I mean, literally everything was thrown into these huge pits. They had no other way to dispose of the garbage. And then it was set on fire with jet fuel. So the result was this big, huge black plume of hung over the base and rained ash on top of these soldiers. They would talk to me about how they would literally have to dust the ashes off them every day. And fast forward 10 years, no surprise. A lot of these soldiers are sick. Some of them started getting sick when they were in country. Mostly mild illnesses, throat issues, eye issues, nose issues. But now we're 10 years later or so, and now the issues range from serious lung issues to rare forms of cancers.
And who is responsible for creating the burn pits? It's just, I mean, the military, but who do they contract out to basically dig a hole and pour jet fuel on the trash and set it on fire? That seems pretty primitive, but who's
Yeah,
responsible
they
for
were
that?
supposed to use, as you mentioned earlier, they were supposed to use incinerators. Well, actually, it goes back even further than that. I mean, they were supposed to, well, to answer your question, the military managed some of the burn pits, but some of the other burn pits were farmed out to private contractors, including, as you mentioned, KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton. So the story really goes back even further than that, because in this case, Halliburton was given a no-bid contract by Dick Cheney, who was vice president at the time, to manage a number of things on military bases, including water and electricity and some of these burn pits. They farmed the burn pit part of it out to their subsidiary, KBR. And
Which
I've
is
seen
illegal, I
contracts.
want to point out. No bid contracts are for emergencies. They're not supposed to give out no bid contracts based on nepotism.
There's a woman in the documentary, her name escapes me now at the time, but she worked for the US military and she was responsible for sort of overseeing contracts. Ended up having to resign because she testified before Congress that the management of the relationship between the government and KBR was the most false and illegal and mismanaged she had ever seen in all her life as managing contracts for the military. So it's they knew it was wrong, but they did it anyway, which is as usual, of course. But I've seen contracts that KBR had with the military in which they were supposed to manage these burn pits according to US EPA regulations. Each base was supposed to be like a little piece of America. So obviously, we can't go into our backyard and burn rubber, or we can't burn tires, we can't burn metal. It's illegal, and there's a reason why it's illegal. It's because it's poisonous. Well, they were supposed to put in incinerators. That would have solved the problem. Incinerators burn everything at such a high temperature that the particles that go into the air are so minuscule that they're, in theory, not harmful anymore. And they were allocated the funds for incinerators. What happened to the money, nobody seems to know. In some cases, they bought the incinerators and they actually placed them on the military bases, but they went unused. In some cases, they were not ordered at all, whatsoever. So nobody seems to know. Senator Tom Udall from New Mexico was in the documentary. He says that he understands that the money was allocated, but where it went, nobody seems to know. But they weren't used for incinerators, that's for sure. So they just threw all the garbage into a big pit and they set it on fire, which is also kind of ironic because the jet fuel that they used contains benzene, and benzene in itself is a carcinogen. So even if you just remove all the stuff that was in the burn pit, just the fact that they were using a carcinogen to burn it is bad enough. Plus all the chemicals that were released from the paints and the solvents and the metals and the plastics and the rubber that they were burning. So it was just this huge poisonous cloud of smoke and this poisonous pit, and it is primitive. And why they chose to do it? Money. It's cheaper, it's easier. And I mean, that's really the only explanation. The KBR blames it on the military. They say the military told us to do it. The military says no, we have contracts. But the problem is that soldiers are sick. They go to the VA. The VA says, "We'll prove that you're sick because of the burn pit." But a lot of times, that's another issue, is that if you're in the military and you're sick, you have to prove that your illness is service related. So cancers, yeah. So cancer, for example, is not something that you get in a day. Obviously, it's something that takes sometimes many years to manifest itself. So you get sick maybe 3, 4, 5 years, which is what's happening now, after you've been released from the military. You go back, the VA says, "Well, okay, you got cancer. Great, we see that. Prove that it's a result of your burn pit exposure." Well, that's very difficult because the VA doctors that you are seeing don't admit that there's a link between burn pits and illness. There's a lot of private doctors that say, and there's some people in the documentary whose doctors have told them this is a very strange illness. This can only be caused by toxic exposure. But they don't really recognize that because you're being treated by the VA. So the VA says, "Yeah, that wasn't one of our doctors who said that." Meanwhile, you're trying to fight your cancer, so you don't really have a lot of time to go dig for evidence because you're just trying to stay alive. So it's just a huge quagmire. It's just
Well,
terrible.
it's overwhelming for an individual to try and take on the government too. There's no doubt burning metals is going to lead to lung and stomach cancer for sure. I think Joe Biden's son might want to look into that. Well, he can't, but Joe Biden might want to look into it because he was stationed over there. That just is blows my mind. Prove that your sickness was caused by this. Well, they can prove that sicknesses are caused by that, like statistically, but not specifically.
Well, what the army says is, yeah, but you were in the desert, so there's dust and there's particles, and you were not in the most developed area of the world. So just being in Iraq in wartime causes these things. So it could have been the air. It could have been the dust. And that's what they say. That's not really a direct result of your service. It's a result of your being in Iraq or being in Afghanistan, but it's not a result of being in your service. Plus, you also have issues. Like I said, sometimes it takes a couple of years for these diseases to manifest themselves. So they say, "Well, you have pancreatic cancer, for example. That could have been caused by anything. You have lung issues, yeah, but you also smoke. You have, whatever, all kinds of issues that can have multiple causes." Even though, as I said, a lot of private doctors will say, there's a person in the documentary by the name of Brian Alvarado who, when he went to war, was this big, handsome, strong, young guy. If you see him now, it's unbelievable. He's literally a walking skeleton. He has a tracheostomy because he had throat cancer. He has a feeding tube in his stomach. He can't eat. He weighs probably 75 pounds. And his doctor told him, because he's his started with throat cancer, they say this is a typical disease for somebody who's 75 years old and has smoked for 40 years, and 30-year-old guys don't get it. This is some kind of toxic exposure. But the VA doesn't recognize it. He even has to fight to get special food because he obviously can't eat solid foods. He has to have liquid food. He has to rely on donations and gifts from family members because the VA says this is not a result of your service. So it's just very, very maddening, to say the least.
Don't we all want government health care? That's disgusting.
Well, I'm now American, but I live in Holland, and I know you live in Japan. I'm not up to date with the healthcare system there, but I know that when I go back to the U.S. and I talk about things like this, and we can have a whole nother discussion about that, but Americans don't seem very willing to listen or explore ideas that maybe other countries use. And I'm not saying Holland is the greatest country in the world and that everything about Holland is fantastic and wonderful, but there are things that you can borrow from other countries. There are policies you could say, hey, that might work here. Let's try that. But because this would not happen here.
Universal health care too. Almost every first world country does outside the United States. The difference is, the Japanese government isn't the American government. The Japanese government isn't murdering millions of people all over the world and doing the kind of thing. They're not. You can think of it like this. Parasites flock to the largest host, and the largest market is the U.S. So all the nastiest lobbies are all inundated and integrated with these people. It's not just Kellogg Brown and Root and Lockheed and stuff. Right. And so that government isn't the one I want in charge of anything, because it won't represent the people the way other governments would in Holland or Taiwan or whatever.
No, this would never happen in Holland, and I assume not in Japan either. And
Japan can't even go to war at all.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's true. So, but it seems very simple to solve, because whether you agree on universal health care or not, I suppose that's a different issue. But and I don't believe in war personally. I wish we didn't have to have war. I wish we didn't have to have soldiers. But the bottom line is that we do have soldiers. So let's just use that point of view for a moment. There is a military, and the people that serve in the military, whether they might be misguided or not, they believe that they're really serving their country, and they're not doing it for fame, and they're not doing it for fortune. I mean, let's face it, when they come back, that they're not getting rich. So it seems to me the least you could do is say, look, we're going to provide you with certain basic things when you come home, like maybe free education. If you want to go learn a trade when you come back, we'll pay for that. But certainly health care. It's not a question of money. The U.S. has the money. You just have to maybe reallocate it a little bit. But it seems to me whether they have a hangnail or whether they have cancer, they shouldn't have to prove that this was caused by their government. They served, they're sick, they should be taken care of. I mean, that seems to me a no-brainer. But
if whoever's sick, they should be taken care of. They went to kill people or not. Some of them went over there to rebuild Iraqi houses and things, construction workers, and they're getting sick too. And of course, Iraqis are getting sick. And so it's disgusting to me. And that, but I think a better point of attack, because it's hard to prove, that's a really hard thing to prove. Well, I got sick specifically because of this, but you can prove that they're violating EPA regulations.
Yeah.
And you can prove that they had the money appropriated and allocated for incendiary, devices, whatever they are, and didn't use them, and then sometimes didn't even bring them.
But the problem is
the fear with the class action lawsuit is KBR going to pay, or are the taxpayers going to have to pay?
Well, see, that's the problem. So the soldiers can't sue the government, right? Because you can't sue the U.S. government. So the only thing they can do is they can sue KBR, and that's what they've done, and that's been going on for 8 years right now. But the problem is KBR did not have an agreement with the soldiers. So as I understand it, KBR violated the terms of their agreement. But the agreement is between KBR and the military. So the military could sue KBR if they wanted to. But the individuals don't really have a claim against KBR because they didn't have a contract with KBR. But to get to your question, the whole thing is a moot point anyway, because when KBR got this no big contract from Dick Cheney, he also gave them an indemnification. So even after 8 years, there's no resolution yet. But let's say there comes some resolution sometime and KBR is found liable. They don't have to pay. It doesn't matter what the size of the fine is, because they have an indemnification. So the American taxpayer is going to end up paying anyway. So there's really going to be no punishment for anybody, as far as where the 25 or $50 million is for incinerators. I don't know why nobody's looking into it. I don't know. It could just be a question of, ugh, it's only 25 million. It's only 50 million out of billions that the
Yeah,
government
it's
spends. So
really
maybe nobody
maybe.
has time to go look for it. Yeah, it's just small peanuts. So maybe they don't have the time to go look for it. I don't know. I mean, I
You'd
don't
think like
know.
some lawyer would want to make a buck off it, and there's a, I mean, they didn't use them. They didn't even have them in some locations. It seems like an
But
easy
again,
thing.
if they have an indemnification anyway, it doesn't matter if you prove that they violated terms of the agreement, because they're not going to have to pay a fine anyway. There's a guy who works for KBR, is actually in the documentary, and he knew what they were doing was wrong. He was one of the guys who worked for KBR who threw crap into the burn pit, and he started feeling guilty about it after a while. So he went to his superiors
They were
and
putting
said,
like
"Look,
cars and things in there too, right? Like this
yeah,
isn't just
trucks,
trash. Yeah.
airplane parts,
He waits.
computers.
Oh,
I mean, it wasn't like just like you empty a garbage can into it. I've got video of people driving these huge trucks. Just they would just drive dump trucks in and dump stuff. I mean, they would literally drive into the fire. I have video of people actually driving into the fire. You see the smoke rising up around the truck. They would then dump all the garbage into the truck, and then they would just drive away. So I mean, it's paper and plastic, but it's also huge pieces of equipment that they would just throw into these pits. And you mentioned earlier the citizens. I also have video of Iraqi citizens scavenging in the burn pits because, one man's garbage is another man's treasure,
Because
right?
they're desperate. They're
So,
desperate. Yeah.
and there's a lot of waste too. There was a lot of stuff that America would requisition, like, we're going to rebuild this office or whatever, and there'd be big pieces of metal or stuff that actually could be used left over. And they would just throw it into the burn pits because they had no use for it. So then that's a whole nother story. Of course, that's just the waste of the military. But you'd have Iraqis coming in and scavenge for stuff that they could use. They'd be chased away. There was people's jobs were to not to shoot the Iraqis, but to warn them with shots and chase them away. And we don't really even know what's happened to them. There are reports that Iraqi children are now being born with higher rates of cancers and things like that. We don't even, but of course, we're never going to find the answers to that, because there's no way we're going to go to Iraq and Afghanistan and do research about that, are we?
I
I mean,
doubt
the
it. Yeah.
smoke of the burn pit doesn't stop at the invisible wall of your military base. It goes out into the local communities. But that's one of the are things that the argument the military uses as an excuse, is just the air and the country's so dirty anyway, so prove that it's from the burn pits.
If you're burning metals with jet fuel, there's going to be like flakes of metal in the air, like pretty large pieces that, you couldn't
Well,
just get by running around in the desert,
some of the doctors I spoke to, well, the way it was originally discovered was some of these soldiers were coming back and they weren't able to do the physical exercise in the beginning. They thought this was weird because they have no injuries, and they would do preliminary lung exams, and they thought, but there's nothing wrong with you. First, they would say it was stress and you have psychosomatic illness, and that's your problem. But there was a doctor at the University of Vanderbilt named Robert Miller, who thought maybe we need to look inside your lung. So he started doing lung biopsies, which is a very invasive and expensive procedure. It's not fun to do. But he discovered these metal pieces that you're talking about. He found that a lot of these soldiers have actual metal pieces inside their lungs. And he was getting soldiers initially referred to him by the government, by the military, because they thought these guys are sick and we don't know why they're sick. As soon as he reported his findings back to the military stopped sending soldiers to him. So the only soldiers he sees now are soldiers that come to him privately outside the auspices of the VA. So they have to pay to go to Tennessee, to the University of Vanderbilt on their own dollar, and pay for him to treat them, because the military doesn't recognize his findings. They have the information, but they choose to ignore it.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Hopefully,
And
some of them had Medicare, Medicaid, or something.
I have this, obviously, a Facebook page. I'm a member of a number of burn pit groups, because once you get into this world, you realize that there's like a whole subculture of burn pit organizations. These families are fighting on their own, and I hear stories every day of my father is sick, or my brother is sick, or my wife is sick. There was several people I was supposed to interview for the documentary, but they passed away before they had time. We actually had the premiere of the documentary, what is it now, about 2 weeks ago in Los Angeles. And there was a woman who lived close by who was sick, and she was too sick to be interviewed, but I invited her to the documentary and she was still too sick. And then a week later, she passed away as a result of her burn pit exposure. And it just goes on and on and on. And nobody really, the government came up with this registry. So they finally, after years and years and years, last year, I think it was, they opened up this registry. So if you believe you're ill as a result of your burn pit exposure, you can go online and you can register. And so far, 110,000 people have registered. But the problem is, first of all, it's just a registry. It's not any kind of real investigation. It's just a
Yes,
list.
I call that hot air politics.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say it's a start. You got to start somewhere, but it's pretty little and it's pretty late. But the problem is, if you've already had a family member who's passed away, you can't put them on the list. So you can't say, I think my wife or husband died, I want to put them on the list. So they're eliminated. And if you are a contractor, so if you happen to work for KBR or another private contractor, and you were exposed to the same thing that the soldiers were exposed to, you weren't officially a member of the military, so you can't go on the burn pit registry either. So that eliminates, 60% of people. So the list right now is 110,000. But the number of people who believe that they are sick due to burn pits is many times higher.
Plus all the Iraqis, obviously.
Plus all the Iraqis and Afghanis
I
who
mean,
knows how many people that is.
yeah, in Afghanistan too. I mean, we're still trying to clean up Agent Orange from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And there's a bill in Congress now, H.R. 334, about that. And I encourage people to try and get co-sponsors and pressure. If you're American, get in there and do that. And so maybe, 40 years from now, we can clean up Iraq. I mean, but
Well,
I
that's where
think
the
those things go together, because whatever congressman, if we can pass this bill on Vietnam, I'm sure why not Iraq and Afghanistan? It's the same ordeal. You're cleaning up poison that you left there. Plus, people should support it anyway. Now, you have a documentary. I guess, I mean, did you read Joseph Hickman's book, I assume? Yeah.
right.
So this documentary that was premiered in Los Angeles, explain to people how they can see it, like the how to like I believe you having people sign like pre-sign up so that you know you have the money
Yeah,
first
well,
and then.
yeah, right now we're doing sort of a tour of cinemas throughout the US, but we're doing this on a crowdfunding basis. So actually, anybody that wants to see the documentary can bring it to their hometown. There's an organization called TUGG, that's TUGG.com. And you can go there and you can search for Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, and you can request a screening in your hometown. You just have to guarantee a certain number of seats, or you have to pre-sell a certain number of tickets, which can vary. The cinema determines that. It can be in Denver, I think we only needed 40, and in other cities we sometimes need 150. So we don't always succeed. But if you think you can sell, normally it's around 75 or 80. So anybody, in fact, can host a screening. I also have a sales agent. So outside the U.S., we're trying to sell it to TV channels outside the U.S. But we do have coming up on Veterans Day in the U.S., which is November 11. I'm going to release the documentary for digital streaming for 1 weekend. So
Like
people can
Vimeo
go
on
to,
demand or something, or on
yeah,
personal
so
web.
people go to Vimeo, which is vimeo.com/on-demand/burnpits. They can pre-register now, and then on the weekend of November 11th and 12th, they can watch it online. Won't be available online again until next year after we finish with our cinema, but I wanted to do a special offer for Veterans Day. So if people go to vimeo.com/on-demand/burnpits, it's only $4.95. They can then stream it on Veterans Day. So I hope people will do that. I mean, the only way we can really create awareness and spread the word is if people read the book, if they see the documentary, if they read up on it. So I don't think $4.95 is too much to ask. I hope people will do that and inform themselves about what's going on, and then, through education, maybe comes change,
I hope so. I'd
Oops.
be happy to stream it for you as well on that day if you want. We'll get a lot of people in there. $5, and I think 10% of that will go to Vimeo also. So, but Tug.com, Tug with two G's, that's where people can have it screened in their city.
Yeah, if they go to tug.com and search for delay, deny, hope you die, then you can put in, you can pick a date, you can pick a cinema. You'll get back within a week or two, you'll get confirmation of that option, and they'll tell you how many seats you need to sell. And then you just, there's no risk involved. So if you don't end up selling tickets, nothing happens. People only actually pay when the screening is confirmed. So basically, they just pre-order the ticket, and when you pre-order enough tickets, then the screening is confirmed, and then it's held at your local cinema. And it's also, I have to say, much more like any movie, really, much more powerful to see in the cinema. It's a pretty powerful experience, I think, when you see it on the big screen and the sound. And I mean, I've seen it obviously hundreds of times because I made it, and I saw it for the first time in Los Angeles on the big screen, and I also was kind of shocked and even emotional when I saw it on the big screen, because I thought, wow, it really is pretty powerful. Because it's not a happy documentary, I have to warn people. There's some pretty heavy duty things in the documentary, and but it is important to see, I think. I mean, it's only through documentaries and books and stories and podcasts and whatever that this stuff comes out, because it's not getting a lot of coverage in the mainstream media. I don't know why, or maybe I do, but
Yeah, you do. You know why.
you see, there are little stories sometimes, like this person I mentioned, this LA, this woman in LA who passed away. The local channel does a story because they see this as a local thing. So there are local stories once in a while, but there's nothing really major. And I've noticed trying to sell it. It's not like the Netflixes and the HBOs are really knocking my door down, even though they must be aware of it, because we had a letter writing campaign, and they got hundreds and hundreds of letters. And I mean, I would think that those are the channels that are interested in subjects that, I mean, it used to be that way when cable first came out, that those were the channels that were sort of cutting edge, and they would do controversial subjects. But I mean, and I guess just politics. I even went to the VFW, for example. They're supposed to represent soldiers, and I thought, hey, why don't you guys host screenings, or if nothing else, just put this out to your members so that they can go to screenings, where they didn't want to get involved because they said it was too political, whatever that means. Although the
It
VFW is
matters
there
too much.
to, well, they're supposed to represent the interest of soldiers. Let the soldiers decide if they want to see it or not. But they didn't want to get involved, and
Could you,
so.
if someone is at a university listening to this right now, would they be able to, like, through their university club or something, screen it at their college? Or they need a theater?
No, they could contact me directly on my Facebook page, and because I do have requests, even from individuals. For example, on Veterans Day in Albuquerque, there's a woman who runs a burn pit organization, and she's licensed the documentary from me, and she's actually going to be having her own little get together for a few hundred people, and she wanted to show the documentary there. So, and if you have an organization, a school, then I would say go to my Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/burnpitsdocumentary. It's just one long word, burn pits documentary,
I'll
and
put a
contact
link
me
below the
directly.
podcast.
Okay.
Yeah,
And
hit that link
if you
and
contact me
contact.
directly,
As I think
then
that's a
we
good
can.
venue is colleges.
Yeah.
They all seem to always want to be active about something. Here's something that
Yeah.
matters. It's not identity politics. It's real people getting
Yeah.
poisoned and getting cancer.
I mean, ultimately, I hope that, somebody like HBO or Netflix that reaches millions and millions of people will ultimately want to pick this up, because that's the quickest and the easiest way to reach the largest number of people. But it may be that this stays a sort of a ground roots kind of effort. It may be that we have to get it shown. When I say we, I mean we the people have to get it shown, because it is controversial. It's not getting a lot of coverage, but it's really important, I think.
It shouldn't be controversial. It's like, what are you on KBR side? You want to hide the fact that they're poisoning people and cutting corners? And have you thought about making a mini disc or a DVD to approach congressmen in the U.S. with to say, here it is, so that they could
Yeah.
maybe write something up and do something about it? Because I know the
We
ones
actually
you should
have,
approach if you're interested in that.
yes, for sure. We actually had a screening in Tampa a week ago, and the woman that screened that requested a couple of DVDs from me, because there were some local representatives, state representatives, and that were there. And yeah, sure, we, you know, and if we have any kind of political contacts, because, you know, look, I'm a documentary maker. I have to make money. I got, maybe, you know, maybe that's another thing you think is interesting. When, you know, I'm based in Holland, just to complicate things when you're making a documentary in America. So it's actually interesting how this documentary was made, because everybody who worked on this documentary did so for free, or I should say more accurately, deferred payment, because I didn't have $100,000 sitting around to go to all these different cities that I needed to go to interview to all these people. So I needed a cameraman in Tennessee to go to Vanderbilt University. So I found one who was willing to donate his basically his time and his effort to spend a day in doing that. And so we got all these interviews all over the country. We found an editor here in Holland that was willing to put in the time. We found somebody coincidentally also in Tennessee to do the music. So all the people that worked on this documentary did so without any payment up front. They all did it for deferred payment because they believe in the cause. I mean, that's an interesting
And
story in itself.
it costs a lot of money to do that on your own. You can't travel around. I know, trust me, I know exactly what you're going through because I also make documentaries and I'm in Japan and I'm like, do I have to fly to DC myself? Why can't somebody in Virginia just do that or something? Good on them for doing all that legwork for you, kind of for
Yeah,
the
and I
pro
would
bono.
Skype in like we're doing now, kind of, and they would set up a camera on a chair or on the table, and so I would do the interview from here, and sometimes I'd be 4 o'clock in the morning because they had to do it after work or whatever. And so I was able to find, I don't know, probably 15 or 20 people who decided to, you know, dedicate a day of their time to go do it. And then, like I said, an editor worked with me here. I mean, you know, it took us a couple months to edit it and somebody to do the music. And so it would be nice from a commercial point of view if I could sell it and pay some of these people back and reward them for their efforts. But, you know, that's only half of it. The other half is we really do believe in this cause and we really want to get the message out and we really do want something to change. Unfortunately, I think for the people that are sick now, nothing is going to help them. The only thing we can do is maybe try to end this cycle of not even really the way we treat veterans, but the way people treat people. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me the way companies poison rivers, and it just, I mean, the list just goes on and on. And personally, you know, look, I'm 57 years old, and I guess I'm just really naive. I'm shocked still. Every time I hear a story like this, I'm just amazed that we just can't treat each other decently and honestly. Of course, you have a right to make a buck, but don't poison a river by doing it. Don't poison another human being by doing it. I mean, what? It just
You know,
seems.
they're already making billions. So what's
I
the
know.
point? Like, why would you just dump jet fuel on a bunch of
It's
trash?
that old joke, right? When you die, the one who has the most toys wins, you know, and then except they consider money to be the toy. And
He
the
who
most, I
dies
mean,
with
I
the
don't know.
most toys still dies. That's my
Exactly.
twist on that.
Exactly. You
You
can't
know,
take it with you, as far as
and
I know.
it's not just Afghanistan or Iraq. Like the e-waste, like there are whole rivers in Ghana and like north of Hong Kong and southern China that are just full of trash. And kids are going there with wire strippers. They used to burn them. We got wire strippers sent to them because I'm a pragmatist because I knew they were going to stop dumping waste. To get the little bit of copper and sometimes even tiny bits of gold that are in computers and stuff because they're desperate and they, you know, whole rivers in Ghana that are just nothing but old computers and so it's just Europe, the United States, and Japan and South Korea is trash. And I don't think people are aware that that's where it ends up. You know, they just
No.
assume when you throw something away that, yeah, people take care of that, right? Yeah, it just goes to Africa or Vietnam and China are the other two hot spots. Not on fire, but it is destroying the river, and then it does get burned eventually, or people trying to
Well, I think
salvage things
part of the
out
problem too, I think, is that a lot of people who just, well, like me, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. We recycle our garbage here. So, and I just thought about it the other day when I was putting my container out. I thought to myself, where does this go, really? You know, we believe that it's recycled, but we don't really know. We just, you take so much on faith and you believe that your government is honest and fair, and maybe with some things they are, but in some ways, I think you should question everything, 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 because the fact is, we don't know. I don't know what happens to the garbage when I put it in the container. I get the container back and it's empty, and I fill it up again, and it goes somewhere. But are you telling me that everything I throw in there, every little piece is recycled? Is that what you're telling me? I don't know. I don't necessarily believe
I
that.
have my dad. I've seen them take aluminum cans and plastic bottles and then dump them all in the same truck. I'm like, why did we separate it? You just mixed it all. It's stuff you have to hold people's feet to the fire. And when you're dealing with things the size of giant corporations, no one person is responsible for all of it. It's like litter. If I threw a can on the road, it actually doesn't matter. But if all of us are doing that all the time, it does. And so everyone can say to himself, I can do this one time. It doesn't make a difference. But they're all saying that and all doing that. And so we're not getting a lot of things recycled that were supposed to be, that people sorted out and everything. It just ends up getting all mashed together and sometimes set
But
on
is there
fire.
no, have we lost common sense? And sometimes when I think about this discussion about climate change, it seems like we're involved in this discussion. Is climate change caused by people or not? And of course,
Well, you
I
shouldn't
believe this.
pollute anyway, so who cares?
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. Forget about the issue of whether humans cause climate change. Do we really want to throw garbage in our backyard? Is that not the answer? We have to leave this planet to our children and to their children, and we should at least leave it in as good condition as we got it. So that should be reason enough not to spew smoke into the air and not to pollute, right?
I
I
agree
mean,
with that. I think the issue with climate change is the politics is it's kind of being used as a pretext to boss around the third world. And what they've done is they've associated a bunch of different gases in there, like methane, which includes it's cow farts, if you remember a few years ago when they were blaming cow farts and destroying the world. It allows giant agribusiness to monopolize the distribution of food, and it wipes out smaller farms and ranches because it's cheaper for them to sell their allotment to the larger company than it is for them to actually just produce. Plus, they don't have to work. But what happens is the giant business ends up getting all the allotments, so they then have a monopoly on the distribution of food and all the other products, corn syrup and other things that come out of farming and ranching. And so there's an agricultural angle to it, an economic angle that is not part of the scientific debate or anything. It's not a problem of like, well, is it man-made or not? It's like, fine, let's say it is. Are the solutions that are being proposed fixing that, or are they just playing around with the numbers and who gets to do what? It's like the oil allotment scandal they had in the 50s with Arthur B. Anderson, where they didn't let them export on the ports, but it helped all the inland companies in Texas and Oklahoma and stuff. Same scam as the carbon credits thing. And then people don't want to go there because they don't want to be associated. Like, people are going to yell at them and say, oh, you're so anti-science and anti-environment. And they're like, no, I have a completely separate issue here. But you can't even like talk as long as I just did without getting interrupted and hit with, or you just hate animals or something. Like, no, man, listen, it's not doing that. You have to really read the legislation and see what they're actually doing, because the solutions they're proposing don't help the environment and it's doing all that other stuff I just said. So people got to dig further when they see stuff like that. But
Yeah, but the
anyway.
problem is, especially, I don't know how it is in Japan, but in Holland, it seems like people disagree, but it seems like the conversations are a lot more civil.
I believe
In the
it.
US, it seems like you've really got left and you've got right, and there's no bridge in between. And it doesn't matter what you say or what you think. If you're on the other side, you're automatically wrong. And so I'm not going to waste my time listening to you. There's no, I mean, nobody's wrong all the time, right?
Right.
So there's just, you notice it with the last political election. It's just you just can't. There's
It
no.
was
There's no.
surface levels. I
Yeah.
mean,
There's just no
during the
adult
debates,
conversation.
Trump was going wrong. Like 1980s, like bully or something. Not, I don't care that Hillary lost because she was nothing
No,
worth
she wasn't
cheering
much
for.
better,
But
but.
you're right. It's so polarized. There's no nuanced position. Like, it's just either or. And, each side thinks the other side's a bunch of idiots or racist or whatever. And I'm like, wow. I mean, how do you have a conversation
You
like
can't. Well, you
that?
can't.
You
You
can't.
notice now with the gun thing, of course, after Las Vegas. Well, we should do this. We should do that. We should. And again, you just. Why can't we just sit down, find out where we can agree, and let's have some adult conversation? Because there is a problem. Let's see how we can solve it. Let's use facts, not emotion. Let's use facts, and just solve the problem. Everybody claims they want to solve the problem, so.
And nothing happens, no matter how
And
many
not.
mass shootings there are. Nothing gets
No, not
changed.
going to
There's
change.
no look into mental health. There's no looking. It's just everybody uses it as a political football. Anti-gun people were using that right away. Other people who hate Antifa blamed it on Antifa. I'm not saying I support them either, but I'm just saying that whoever they didn't like already, that's what they're going to blame it on, no matter what. People who wanted to go after mental health went after mental health. And they might be right. And people who want to go after guns went after guns. And they might be right too. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm just saying they didn't determine that by having a long discussion and looking at all the angles. They determined it
No.
because that's already their ideology, and they weren't even going to listen to anything else.
But the
So.
fact is that in the rest of the world where we have gun control, the fact is there are less gun crimes. There are less murders in general.
No, that's not
So,
true. Brazil, Honduras,
well,
Venezuela,
I didn't, I
Colombia,
mean,
they got
every.
like triple the murder rate and firearm
Now,
shootings than the United States.
in the Western world, for example, of course, there are exceptions. But in Europe, for example, there's less murders per capita than there is in the United States. It's less. In Holland, which has about 18 million people, there's not even a murder a day.
There's less in Japan than I think anywhere in the world for a country its size.
Yeah,
But
so
the
I'm not
thing
saying,
is,
of course.
like, you can make murders already illegal. So making the guns illegal is like making drugs illegal. Some countries have huge drug problems and some don't, even though the
Well,
law is
I'm
the
not
same in
saying,
all of them.
no, but I'm just
You're
saying,
not allowed to do heroin in any country.
no,
And
of
Japan
course.
doesn't have a heroin problem, but Britain does. You know, there's other reasons why there are shootings, and a lot of it's the drug trade. A lot of it is,
No,
I
I
think.
agree, but I'm just saying that there are regulations for having a car. There's a regulation for
Sure.
having a daycare center in your home, and I don't see any problem with, I mean, guns are not illegal in Holland either. You can have a gun in Holland. You just have to have, you have to go through certain tests and you have to meet certain requirements and there's certain
Can't buy one at
regulations. No,
Walmart.
exactly. That's what I mean. I'm not saying you can't have a gun, and I'm not saying everybody has a gun is a killer either, but I don't see why there can't be some kind of legislation.
The reason is because there's almost a cult-like sense of paranoia of some groups in the US where it's like if any like this is a slippery slope for them, not for me, but they'll be like anything against any kind of gun regulation at all is like they're gonna it's just a pretext because they're really coming after all of them or
Right,
something.
that's what they
That's
say,
the
yeah.
fear. Because they don't trust the government. And it's hard to argue and say, no, you can trust the US government. That's a hard argument to make.
No, but the
Because it's
fact of the
like,
matter
well.
is that if the government wants to come get you, they can get you. And you with your AK-47 is not going to stop a tank rolling down the street, or it's not going to stop a drone from, bombing your house.
That'd
So
just be like
if the
Waco. They just set the whole thing on fire and kill
Yeah,
everyone.
so the pretense is we need to protect ourselves against the government. Well, the government already has too much anyway, so they can get you if they want to get you. But
It's not going
it
to
just
change because they just make so much money selling guns.
no,
I
it's not
mean,
going
a
to
lot
change
of the
much.
arms that are in those other places I listed, where do you think that, where do they originate? You know, our
Yeah.
biggest export after food is weapons. So,
Weapons. Yeah.
yeah,
It's
weaponry.
just funny when you go back. I mean, I'm from Texas, so it's just funny when you go back to Texas and you go to a Target. And there's a sign on the door that says, please leave your weapons outside. It's like the old West days, and it's just sort of like, what year are we living in? I mean, come on. But I don't live there anymore, so it's not doesn't really affect me on a day-to-day basis. But more people are going to get killed because it's a lot easier to kill people from a 30-second story window with a gun than it is with a rock, and that's a fact. So,
That's true. Well, you've seen in places like Sweden too, where guns are coming in, they're completely defenseless. Like people are taking over stores and just saying, "This is my business now. What are you gonna do? You can't do anything."
No.
There's a lot of things that have to change to fight that kind of phenomenon where there's a mass shooter shooting strangers is very different than that someone that at least had an ideology, whether it was religion or revenge or something, or knew the person or hate. This is just a very strange and modern thing to go in and just randomly shoot people in a crowd or run over them with a car or whatever. There's something deep going on, but I want to steer it back towards burn pits and close this
Yes,
comment. Interesting conversation. I think this is all
we
worth it.
digress.
And I do agree with you about the way in Japan and Holland, Europe in general, they're a little bit more open to at least hear another side. Some of them think they've heard it all. But you'll give you a chance to speak. In the US, there's hardly a platform with it. Like, I can call someone one-on-one like this, but that's going to take forever. The way that Facebook and all these social media sites are, it's set up echo chambers where if someone says something you don't like, you just ban them, block them, whatever, and people move in their mouth, but nothing in their ears. And it goes all the way to the top. The mass media is. And the late night comedians and stuff, that's the news. Like, there's no difference really between Comedy Central and CNN. It's all the same level of jingoism and douchebaggery.
a good word.
So yeah, that's well for that's mild for what I would usually say about the three-letter networks, because we would not have had these wars in Iraq or Afghanistan if they didn't sell it to people on a pack of lies to start with. So there's that. What's your next city that you're hoping to screen?
Our next city is actually on November 9th. That's going to be in Nashville. We actually sold out in Nashville. So that's all places. That's because the guy who wrote the music is from Nashville. Then we have one November 20th in Houston. And then it's sort of up to, as I said, it's up to the people themselves. It doesn't really do me any good to say I want to have a screening in Arlington, Virginia, because I don't know anybody in Arlington, Virginia. So it's up to the people themselves to really say, I can get 50 or 75 or 100 people to go watch this. It's no more expensive than a normal movie. And they can go to, as we said, they can go to TUG and they can put in a request and they can get their school friends or their colleagues or their family or whatever, local veterans, whatever they want to do to just get a group of people to come and invite local press and whatever. So anybody who feels strongly about it can host a screening anywhere. And if they can't, then they've got this weekend where they can stream it through Vimeo and maybe spread the word about that to get people to watch it, to get people watch it that way. And then the other thing that they can do if they really want to see it is write to Netflix, write to HBO, say, I've seen this documentary, I've heard about this documentary. And if they get enough letters, maybe eventually they'll say, all right, we need to show this to people. Write to PBS, write to whoever.
I think we can make that happen. TUGG.com. Get on there, folks. I want to see a lot of new cities pop up. Now, the list of where it's being shown already, that's on your Facebook, or is that also on Tug?
They could go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/burnpitsdocumentary, and well, right now my banner is sort of promoting the Veterans Day, but after Veterans Day, they'll be able to just click on that banner and they'll be able to see a list of all the cities that it's playing. They can also drop me a message if they want more information about how to go about requesting it, whatever. But like I said, you don't even really need me. You can just, that's the kind of cool thing about Tug. It's just a platform with all kinds of movies, and you can just go in and say, I want to see this movie, and I'm going to get my friends and colleagues and classmates or whatever, and we're going to do it.
I think I might have to get on Tug myself. So,
I don't think you can do it in Japan. It's only the US, unfortunately.
no, I'll just put my films in there and let the
Oh,
US
you have your
do
own
it.
films. Yeah, you definitely
Sure.
should, because anybody, like I said,
So
anybody can say,
Canada
I want to.
can't, it's just, I was thinking it's English-speaking countries, but it's just a US thing, huh?
Right now, it's just a US platform. It's really designed so that independent filmmakers who haven't gotten a distributor can get their films show to the cinema. Just do it yourself. You don't have to wait for somebody to pick it up and then do this whole national distribution. If you want it in the cinema, you can do it yourself. It's actually a great idea for other countries to do as well. And there may be a similar platform in Japan or something. I don't know. I know there's not one in Holland, but the stream is
Although films
available
aren't in Japanese yet, so that doesn't matter. But
But the stream is available internationally. So anybody who wants to go to Vimeo and search for Delayed and I Hope You Die can stream it anywhere in the world on Veterans Day. I have to be careful with that I release it digitally before we're done with the cinema. But actually, the digital stream is available international anyway already. So anybody who's international can watch the stream
yeah, I
anyway.
think people overseas should do definitely check this out. People in Iraq might want to check this out if you're over there. All right, anything else you want to add? They got all the links below, and so I
Yeah.
really encourage you. This is our call to action. I'll be doing a YouTube video about this too, to get on Tug and see what the requirements are in your little local hood, and we gotta make this happen. And I'm hoping that we can also get those DVDs to Statesman too. So if there's anything else you
Yeah.
want to add.
No, just, I mean, this is really a grassroots effort. So anybody that's got any contact with media, with politicians, with local cinemas, with local TV channels, whatever, you get in touch because, it's really one thing about America that's still great, I think, is that people can make a difference. So if people come together, we can get this shown. We can create awareness for this issue and we can make a difference. So I just can't do it by myself. I certainly can't do it from Holland. So I
If we
really need
really
help.
care about our boys, as they are always called, support our troops, then you got to care about them when they're sick and when they're hurt, not just the glory part and waving flags. This is a concrete way that you can help people who have been hurt and who are sick, who are dying. And it would be good for them to see it, to see that kind of uprising and see that kind of show of support internationally, people from Holland, Japan, wherever, and of
Yep,
course in the
that's a
United
dream.
States.
Well, thanks for helping me get the word out.
No.